The Brad Sesmatch Show, broadcasting live.
Off we go into the month of December, and welcome on in on this Monday. We are going to have Jody Jackson. Jody Jackson's Gems, brought to you by E.D. Marshall Jewelers. It was not a gem of a performance by your Cardinals. Jody and I will break it down coming up here at about 10:15. John Wilner, the Wilner Hotline, nationally syndicated columnist. John Wilner knows all, tells all. John and I are both Heisman Trophy voters. We both have our ballots. They came today. We cannot discuss who we are voting for in terms of order, but we can talk about where Cam Scataboo would be in that discussion, which we will do. And also ASU against Iowa State and the beatdown in Tucson and much, much more. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always and through the years, we appreciate Desert Financial Credit Union, Jeff Mishi, and their support of what we do. I got a couple things, a couple housekeeping things. So this Anthony Robles Unstoppable movie, I'm going to start there because this is something you can get involved in. I had some people at Amazon that reached out. I reached back. We agreed. I have a screening. I have an entire movie theater, 125 seats. Anthony's coming. Anthony's coming. And we're all excited. And it's going to happen this Saturday. What else is going on this Saturday? Yeah. So all of a sudden, I have this theater packed. And I'll still pack it. But I've got a few extra seats. Because some people said, yeah, we love Anthony. And we want to see the movie. Because it looks great. Anthony Robles, born with just one leg. Wrestled, starred at ASU in the NCAAs. Just a terrific person. Just so good. And it's his life story. And it's going to be released in January, but I've got a private screening. And now I've got some extra seats. So if you're one of those that wants to go, and I'll even let you bring a friend, all you have to do is just send an email to hello@sports360az.com. That's it. Just tell me who's coming, because there's going to be a list. I'll have the list. And we'll send you the information as to where the screening is going to be. And Anthony and I are going to do a Q&A afterwards. He and I will sit up on bar stools and pass a mic around, and it's going to be cool. But it's this Saturday, because there's something big going on this Saturday. So had a great Thanksgiving. Three of the four kids made it. We're working on the set a little bit. We're actually going to be moving in 2025 to we're going to go back into studio. We had studios for years up in Scottsdale. We are not going to be back in Scottsdale. Nothing personal, it's just long. So what you're seeing now is going to give way to something new, and that will be in 2025. In terms of the sports news of the day, Let's start with Big 12 title game, Saturday. Arizona State, Arizona game on this last Saturday. First of all, I'm curious what the ratings point is for the ASU-U of A game, because Michigan-Ohio State was the lead-in. For all the things that ASU had outside of their control, being in the Pac-12 and the badly mismanaged Pac-12 network distribution deal, and then being relegated to like FS2, FS1, you know, FS1 doesn't even travel announcers to a lot of their games now. And, you know, to have just such poor distribution and put on Fridays opposite of Auburn, Alabama, and just awful. And, well, it's Territorial Cup. It's a big deal. No, it's not. Usually a coach is going to get fired, and the stadium's half full, and it's a lot of people reliving their glory days, which is fine. It's fine. I'm not bad-mouthing that. It's just there's been no buzz. Well, Saturday was a ton of buzz. Ohio State-Michigan came down to the end. We had a brawl on the field at Ohio State-Michigan, which kept viewers. And then they go right to ASU, and ASU comes right out and just destroys Arizona. That game was no contest. That was a no moss, throw in the towel, get it out of the way. U of A did not want any part of that dog. None. And if you're taking this in, and you, I didn't go to ASU, I don't care. I didn't go to U of A, don't care. Don't care. What I do care about is when one team comes in and just looks like they're ready to jack stomp the other, which had happened the previous 2 years with U of A. And so now ASU, outside of Jordan Tyson's injury, which doesn't look good, I'm not going to sit here and play doctor. Kenny is talking later today, and I think we all saw with him in a sling and all that what it means for ASU to not have their star wide receiver in all likelihood available against Iowa State. Jordan Hamm is going to be in Dallas. He'll be there later this week, so you'll see a lot of his content up on the site. And just a great weekend. We'll talk more about ASU and their future with John Wilner coming up at 10:30. John and I will be chopping it up on Cam Scataboo and the Heisman Trophy and all that, because we're both Heisman voters. The ballots are here, and we'll go through that. That'll be coming up. Iowa State is not good against the run, but they're a veteran team. That's a program that I think Matt Campbell, and I've talked with him a few times during the Brock Purdy era. People may not remember, but Taylor Mauser, who played over at Basha High School here in the Valley, was their RC at Iowa State, is involved with their offense. That's a good local tie to this game, as Taylor is, he's well-regarded, well-respected. And so you've got ASU ranked 12th. If Iowa State ranked 16th, nobody would have foreseen this. The winner of this game goes into the playoff. The loser, in my opinion, and I'll ask John about it later, John Wilner, there's no shot that they're going to get two in from the Big 12. None. So we will we'll talk with him about that. Your Cardinals yesterday, man, your team, blowing a 13-point lead. That was rough. And it's erratic of Kyler Murray. It's just, it's very frustrating. If you're the, and I'm talking to Jody about this in a few minutes, if you are the management of the Cardinals, if you're Monty Austinfort, you just extended James Conner over the weekend. Little nugget to drop below the surface on Saturday morning. James Conner extended a couple years. It's great news. Commitment to keeping your best players here. Look at the roster. We believe in James Conner. Like, give him an extension. Sends a message to the locker room. All those positive things. But I have to believe somewhere, deep inside the management heads of the organization, and maybe even the coaching heads, is, do we have our guy at quarterback? Do we have our guy at quarterback? Because I love watching Kyler Murray play, but man, there's some boneheaded decisions still. Just erratic. Intentional grounding, erratic. Trying to throw the football away that gets intercepted. What happened last week at Seattle? Erratic, erratic. And it's just, it's really frustrating because Minnesota, here's a team that was right there for the taking. And now you're basically in a must-win against Seattle this week because of the way the division is laying out and all the wild cards within the rest of the NFC. And yeah, it was, no one was expecting them to win at Minnesota to begin with, but you could have stole one there. And the fact that the offense has scored all of one touchdown the last two games is just brutal. It's just brutal. And you know, people are being critical of Marvin Harrison Jr. The expectation of a rookie to come in and have it all figured out immediately, and you just want to pound on him, that's one thing. There's a couple plays where, was he looking? Did he not turn around quick enough? So on and so forth. Sure. Why can't Trey McBride get into the end zone? I don't know. I'm not as concerned about that because they're getting the football. But you've got a quarterback that is sitting there the last 2 weeks that has not looked like one of the best quarterbacks in the league. He's good. He's good. But I need great. I need great. I need decision-making that is just not one moment, like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And that's what happened. You know, I want to get back on the college thing because we had the flag planting. We had some flag planting by ASU at the end of their game with the Wildcats, and we had some flag planting Michigan, Ohio State. And there is a side of me that says, you know what, if you work that hard and you really feel like you have to plant a flag, or I forget which one it was, where they had some belts out and they were whipping the ground afterwards. If that's what it takes to get you all excited, that's, you know, we're talking like 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-olds. Do we have to have that display? Ryan Day is going to get fired. He's got to get fired, right? He didn't even go in and try to pull his players out in the middle of that brawl with Ohio State, Michigan afterwards. But do we need to have that sort? Is it fines against the – it's like fans storming the field. Fans storming the field can be a really bad deal. I actually get it where you're fining them. You know, an NFL stadium, you never see that happen. But in college, it's like par for the course. And kids get excited, and you're just asking for something to go wrong. Look at – there's a soccer story today. Hundreds of people injured or killed from a stampede at the end of a soccer match. And you think I'm overstating this stuff. It's just – no, I'm looking at it. The other side is, hey, kids are going to be kids. We should celebrate. It's our way of expressing ourselves. We've got to blow off some steam. It's a tough time that we're in with my job, the economy, the this, the that, my marriage is going to blow up, whatever it may be. People want to go to sporting events and just unwind and unleash. I get it. But the planting of the flag just feels so small. It just feels so small. You just won the game. That's it. You know, you just go out and you take care of your business and you walk off the field. But that's not where we're at in this day and age. We've got to go a little bit further. We've got to show, look at what we're all about. We're going to plant a flag and, oh, man, I am so offended. Really? How about winning the game? It's not that hard. Jody Jackson is next. Jody's Gems, brought to you by Edie Marshall Jewelers, and then John Wilner and Wilner Hotline. Again, if you want to go to the Robles screening, I've got a couple. When, if you don't hear back from me, it means, or the team, it means they had too many submissions, okay? Or you weren't first in line or 10th in line, whatever. That is hello at sports360az.com if you want to go to the Robles screening. And we're back with more after this timeout. Now it's time for Jody Jackson's Gems, brought to you by E.D. Marshall Jewelers. The gems delivered by Jody every week. She wears them.
Got them on.
She delivers them in, not like literally, but okay, deliver me what happened to the Cardinals in Minnesota. Let's just get that out of the way. That was not a gem.
And even, you know, a day later, just so angry about it because they had them. You know, they had them, albeit they didn't have the 19-6 lead for long, but they were in that hostile atmosphere against a 9-2 Vikings team. And it was 19-6, you know. Unfortunately, that touchdown to Marvin Harrison Jr., you know, I kind of thought, all right, maybe things loosen up now. Maybe they are able to score some touchdowns now. And it just, that was the lone touchdown. And Chad Ryland, he missed a field goal, but he went 5-for-6 with field goals. So, I mean, for me, at least, I mean, I'm sure Chad Ryland doesn't feel great because he missed one in a one-point game. I'm sure Nick Rawls and the defense doesn't feel great because they allowed the fourth down conversion that eventually led the Vikings to their score. But those are really not the culprits in this game. I think that's clear. I think we can all see that. When you go down to the red zone six times and you only get one touchdown, it's a failure of the offense. And this is the strangest game to me, Brad, because they piled up 406 yards. They held Minnesota to 273 or 278 or something like that. And yet, you know, they were hard yards. You know, it was a game plan to keep Kyler upright. It was a game plan to have the short passing game. They ran the ball well, but you never got the feeling, you know, that they were going to bust through, you know, for example, going for it on fourth down. I mean, they weren't going to get 4 yards on the ground there. That's pretty. It's the NFL. You don't see that very often. And then what pass play were you going to run? I mean, I would love to see Trey McBride finally get in the end zone. The guy has done everything you can imagine This guy is unbelievable. He catches everything, 12 catches, 12 targets, 96 yards. But he seems to be the only real reliable pass catcher, time in and time out. And some of that might be on Kyler. And some of it, I think, clearly is on Marvin Harrison Jr. for not being quite ready to be that reliable target at this level. So, I mean, it was just a frustrating game from all angles. And now here they stand at 6-6, with a must win at home this week against Seattle.
Jody Jackson, Jody Jackson's Gems for a couple of minutes, brought to you by ED Marshall Jewelers. Okay, I'm going to go back to Kyler. Consistently inconsistent was how I viewed his performance on Sunday. This was, and yes, the whole offense, when you have plays of 16 drives, 16 plays, 11 plays, 12 plays, and every time you come away with a field goal. But Jody, you just had some mistakes by Kyler. The intentional grounding late in the game was just, that's a mental error that you cannot have at this stage of your career. The intercept, there's never a good interception. You know, when people say, oh, that was a bad interception, well, yeah, that's okay. You might be able to make an argument. Well, he was just trying to get something done. These have been bad ball decisions that he's made the last 2 weeks with interceptions. And for this offense to be stumbling around with one touchdown in the last two games, that's unacceptable. It just is.
Yeah, I wrote in my notes a horrible interception. I mean, you're just trying to figure out, you put yourself, in his spot. What are you doing right there? And he just panicked and threw the ball up. And we did see that before. And look, it kind of, if you're Kyler Murray, you're looking at the whole picture and thinking, I did a lot of things right. I did X amount of, I made the right read here. I dumped the ball here. I was accurate here, threw good balls. But unfortunately, all of that gets wiped away when you don't make good decisions late in games, and you quite frankly make horrible decisions. It's not even, good versus mediocre. It's a really bad decision. And so, you end up ending that drive with the pick, and then the grounding is again something that just can't happen. And that's something that we saw from him a couple of years ago. That was a little bit frustrating. And I remember one in particular against Seattle down near the goal line. It might have even been back to 2020. So you might think, why am I dredging this up? I just, again, you hope that he learns from that type of thing where you're not going to do that again. So that popped up again. That brought you from 1st and 5, regardless of whether the false start was a false start or offsides. But either way, they had 1st and goal from the 5. They ended up being 2nd and whatever it was from the 25. And that's just took them out of range of being able to score a touchdown there again. So you're right. I think, I'm sure Kyler Murray might feel like it's unfair to put this loss on Kyler Murray. But again, you're the quarterback. You have to make these decisions. You have to, if you're not going to be able to make a great play, you have to at least not make a catastrophic play that is going to cause your team to eventually, fall out of, not have a lead, not be able to possess the ball in the most key times. Because yeah, that last drive, that drive where they were on the goal line and then had the penalties, that was a 16 play drive, Brad. You mentioned it. And you can possess the ball for only so long. Eventually you have to get 6 because getting 3 wasn't enough yesterday.
Okay, so I'm Monty Austinfort, and I'm seeing in the middle of the season what Kyler Murray did at Minnesota. And I can watch what Kyler Murray's done in other games that have been terrific and great, but I always have to be looking at my roster and deciding moving forward, is this the guy? This isn't the conversation for you and I to have today, I don't think, because it's a long conversation. I take this back to James Conner. Okay, they've decided we want James Conner here. And over the weekend, quietly, they announced Saturday morning that they signed him to do an extension. I don't think you or I would disagree with that move at all. My point is when you have some games like what happened up in Minnesota, you do have to put that in your memory bank if you're management about, is this my guy?
Well, I think that's there has been question about his decision making and how he's in year 6 and where he is. He's gotten better in a lot of respects. I think, again, it's just a question of what's out there in the NFL week after week with a quarterback play. And you see guys that don't make mistakes like that. They don't always make the perfect throw, but there's like the side to the mental game where you're just not allowing those things to happen. And that's still where Kyler is. He's still got to get better in that aspect. And I think if you're the Cardinals, Given the contract that he has, you're hoping that that changes. But you're right, it's got to be. I thought of, the front office yesterday when that game ended, and I thought, what are you? You thought maybe you were past some of these things, the mental errors, the bad decisions. Because again, you can live with a guy, even the great quarterbacks make a bad throw, or,
Sure.
but at times it's just things that you feel like can be controlled in the moment with a better decision. And so I really don't know, if they're thinking, okay, I feel like they have to hope that it just continues to get better. Because it is hard to find a quarterback with the talent that Kyler Murray has. I mean, he's had some really good games this year. He's had a perfect passer rating earlier in the year. He had another game later where he was 22 of 24. I mean, there are a lot of things that he does well, but he's still not quite there yet. And especially these games that are right there at your fingertips, how do you go and grab them? And I could even go back to earlier in the game. I mean, are you even in this spot if you're able to, make some plays earlier in the game, some of the other drives that, ended for whatever reason. They had penalties throughout the game,
Right.
which were difficult. I mean, you looked at the one ineligible man downfield. That's basically on Kyler as well. Little things, but unfortunately, all of these little things turn into
Big.
big things later on. And we're still having questions now here about Kyler Murray.
Must win Sunday at home against Seattle. Yes or no?
Well, I remember a couple of weeks ago you asked me, is this a playoff team? And I said yes. And I was I guess drinking the Kool-Aid after seeing some of the wins, and I knew these games were going to be tougher. I knew that Seattle and Minnesota were going to be tougher than Chicago and the New York Jets. And so is it a must win though? Yes, because Seattle now is a team that's playing better. They are in first place. The 49ers are maybe not a threat, which is crazy to say, although you never say never with all of their injuries and all of the terrible things we saw in the snow being dominated by Buffalo. And then the Rams are still, to me, a team, that despite some major flaws, I think this thing could still come down to the wire. It really can. But I do believe the Cardinals need to win this game against Seattle. Oh, by the way, some of these other teams that we left for dead, Brad, like Carolina, they look like they're figuring it out a little bit. So there's no easy win in the NFL. And I mean, to get the rematch, you have a rematch, you have that opportunity, and it's at home. You have to get it done. If you don't get it done, frankly, you probably don't deserve to be in the playoffs.
Jody Jackson, delivering the gems, brought to you by E.D. Marshall Jewelers. We'll see you again next week. Thanks.
Sounds good, Brad. See you then.
And now here's John Wilner. John Wilner joins us every week. Wilner Hotline, knows all, tells all, nationally syndicated columnist, things around college football. We're just going to get right into Arizona State, Iowa State in the Big 12. I'm not laughing at it. I'm laughing because of it. Okay. Just like, who had this?
It's a new world order. This is conference realignment plus a 12-team playoff, and here you go, right? Otherwise, these teams, their seasons would be done. The Big 12's season would essentially be done because it would never have sent a team into the 14 playoff with multiple losses. And yet here we are, and it's great. It's very Big 12. Like, there's nothing that speaks Big 12 more than ASU versus Iowa State. It's great.
It is great. I'm sitting here in a town where a year ago we were talking about NCAA and violations and
Yep.
Pierce and all that stuff. And a year later, of course, we're talking about a team that's ranked in the top 15 in the country. Of course, we're talking about a team that could be in the college football play. Of course, we are. Forget about NCAA bannings and fines and all that stuff. So.
Oh, it's amazing. Dillingham has done an incredible job. I'm sure, will be on the short list for all major Coach of the Year awards, national and Big 12, and he deserves to be. It's been remarkable. He has flown under the radar, right? I mean, Dion has obviously dominated the conversation. Kirk Cignetti at Indiana has gotten a ton of play, but you could put the job Dillingham has done up with any of them, and it may be a better job that he's done given the NCAA clouds and the restrictions they've been playing under basically for the last couple of years.
Heisman Trophy votes were sent out this week. You're a Heisman voter. I'm a Heisman voter. We're not allowed to discuss where we're going to put players on our ballot, but we can say who are some players that are going to be out there. And it's pretty obvious. A couple are from Colorado. If you're making a case for Cam Scataboo, John, what's the case that could be made for Cam Scataboo as a Heisman Trophy vote?
Well, the impact he's had on his program. I mean, he has changed the trajectory of ASU. Jordan Tyson's been great, right? And certainly Dillingham has had a ton to do with it. And Sam Leavitt has been phenomenal. Defensive line has played much better. But he not only has had a greater impact than anybody, but also represents ASU's rise and the way they play. But it's going to be very difficult for him. He has flown under the radar all season, just like ASU has flown under the radar. A lot of that has to do with the shadow that Colorado has cast over the whole Big 12 with Deion and with Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter, right? I mean, most people, ASU's had some good TV slots, but who from the Big 12 is on broadcast television every week? It's Colorado, right? And BYU's hot start kind of got them a lot of play. ASU's been under the radar. I don't think Dillingham has been had a problem with that. It's good in a way to have the spotlight away from your program, but it does hurt you with the Heisman because it is such a popularity contest. His impact, his stats don't measure up. He's not the two-way player that Hunter is. He's not a quarterback. He's been really, really good and had a huge impact, but it's going to be very hard for people in the eastern half of the country. A lot of them don't even know who he is.
Right. No, that's true. That's very fair. I mean, Nick Saban the other morning on game day said that Cam Scataboo is his favorite player in college to watch. That's like the first time anybody of national ilk has pointed at him. And I would say that as Cam Scataboo has grown down here, a transfer from Sacramento State, this type of player, it's kind of the blueprint, I think, of what Kenny wants to do at ASU, which is we're going to go get the guy that's at the smaller program and we're going to continue to develop them rather than we can go get a five-star maybe, but we'll probably lose him in NIL.
Right. And he also represents the way Dillingham wants to play, too. Having lots of fun and just a wrecking ball. And one of the reasons ASU has been so successful this season is they're much more physical at the line of scrimmage than they used to be, physical in their running game. And he has a lot to do with it, the way he plays. Yeah, it's a terrific story. It could stand up there with most of the great off-the-field personal stories that you see from the top players around the country. But again, 5-6 of the Heisman voting block is east of the Mississippi. How many of those voters have seen him? How many of those voters have known his name until recently? Not very many.
Yeah, and he's going to be on major display this Saturday. Heisman votes aren't due Sunday. So you have Iowa State and Arizona State playing in the Big 12 championship game. Who do you like, John?
I like Iowa State. I think it's essentially a toss-up. I think the betting line probably reflects that. I tend to lean a little bit to Iowa State. I think they're just so solid, so well coached. They're kind of like ASU, but just a little bit more mature as a program. And I think as a team, right, they've got a veteran quarterback. And in a game like this, so much of it is on the quarterback for not only making big plays, but avoiding those killer mistakes. Rocco Brecht from Iowa State is very good. I just like his experience over Sam Leavitt in a big game environment. And so that's part of the reason why I lean to the Cyclones. And Matt Campbell, their coach, is really, really good.
John, and I would agree with you about a more mature program. I think it's a good way to put it. Is the Big 12 a more mature conference this year than the SEC? And people would say that's a crazy question to ask. But if you look at how the Big 12 has gone about its business this year, and you do have the Heisman Trophy guy here, and Colorado is on every week, and the big programs within the SEC where they say, well, they're just beating up on each other, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think there's
they lose a lot of players every year, so those programs aren't as good as what they once were. Is that fair to say? Like, this whole SEC and everybody else, our SEC, Big Ten, and everybody else is overstated? Do you buy that?
A little bit. I do think the SEC has more good teams than any other conference, right? If you get to number 7 or 8 in the SEC, I think that team's better than number 7 or 8 in the other conferences, for example. But I do agree in general that the SEC is not maybe as dominant as it often is. And part of that to me is the quarterback play has not been great. Jaden Milroe up and down at Alabama. Nussmeier at LSU hasn't been great. Same with Tennessee and, you know, all the usual suspects. Even Carson Beck at Georgia has been up and down. So that to me is maybe the biggest reason the SEC hasn't been what we would have expected. But if you're talking about quality depth, I think it is still number one.
Yeah, I mean, I have to sit here and just say the other night when ABC's broadcasters, who are very, very good, kept saying Georgia's in the playoff.
Yeah.
I know that. And then when I'm watching Big Ten and Ohio State, and it's referred to by the play-by-play person who's very, very good, that the worldwide program known as the Ohio State, like, okay, these networks are selling the product.
Yes.
And the product on the field being judged for itself. I felt like we saw, and you do media stuff too, and I do as well. I felt like over the weekend there was a lot of media sales behind the scenes going.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, think about how much Disney, you know, via ESPN and ABC has invested in the SEC. And think about how much Fox has invested in the Big Ten, right? We're talking hundreds of millions of dollars a year. The Joe Tessitore's continual references to Georgia being in the playoff if they won, I think he's right, first of all. But certainly that was a product of ABC trying to sell the SEC in Georgia. The reason I think they're in is because if the committee doesn't allow the two loss, Georgia's 10-2. If they lose the SEC championship game, it would set a terrible precedent for the value of the championship conference championships, which ABC has a huge stake in that too, with the SEC championship game, right? They want those games to be relevant. If Georgia gets left out, let's say they lose to Texas 30-20 and they're left out, that's going to send a message that playing in your conference championship is a high risk. Georgia and any other team next year in the SEC would view playing in their conference championship game as a risk to getting left out of the playoff. So then it would devalue the game. So I don't think the committee can afford to leave out the loser of the SEC or Big Ten championship games ever, really, unless it's a blowout, because otherwise you're opening a wormhole there.
Last question, I'll get you out of here. What are you most looking forward to in terms of result this weekend that you believe will play into the playoff?
The biggest, you know, linchpin game, so to speak, is the ACC. So if SMU wins, they're obviously in via the automatic bid, and then Clemson's not getting in. The loser of the ACC title game with 4 losses, is Miami in or out? But if Clemson wins, and Miami could get left out, but if Clemson wins, then all of a sudden the ACC championship game loser, SMU, is got 2 losses. Do they stay in ahead of a 3-loss team from the SEC? That's going to be one of the big debates. 2-loss SMU, loser of ACC championship, versus a 3-loss SEC team that doesn't make the SEC championship. The other one is the Mountain West, which is Friday night, Boise against UNLV. If Boise wins and they're 12-1, do they get that 4th spot and the opening round bye, which would make the Big 12 champ, whether it's ASU or Iowa State, play on the road in the opening round?
Okay, so you're saying definitively for the fans in this audience, ASU loses, they're not in the playoff.
Oh, no. I mean, not a chance in heck of getting in the playoff. And Iowa State, same with Iowa State. The loser of the Big 12 title game is not getting in. They got 3 losses. There's no chance. Colorado's not getting in. Kansas State. I mean, the Big 12 is a one bid league, the winner of the game, and that's it. And it's been that way for weeks. I've just looked at where the committee has ranked the Big 12 teams. I mean, ASU is the highest ranked Big 12 team, and they're 16th. They're five spots behind Boise. I mean, Kansas State was seven spots behind Tulane. They beat Tulane. So the committee, for whatever reason, I don't think thinks very highly of the Big 12, but the loser of this game has got zero chance to get in.
That's John Wilner. He joins us every week delivering the goods. Thanks.
Thanks very much.